were speaking on a number of days last week in relation to the situation and the current very difficult situation at the Emergency Department of University Hospital Kerry. Story after story came through to us. We were speaking with Deputy Michael Healy-Ray about what needs to be done or what can be done, if anything, to address the problems that are leading to all sorts of different fallouts. The waits, the delays, the amount of time people have to do, the wait for a bed, the wait in the trolley area, the ambulance delays caused by delays in trying to get people out of the ambulances and into the emergency department. Well, one of those who contacted us is Sarah O'Gorman from Tarver, told me the story of taking her child who needed stitches for a particularly deep wound in to the emergency department. She's making a call that some sort of a children's paediatric emergency department needs to be developed at the hospital, because what her son went through was just unacceptable. Have a listen.
Yes, he was just on flight plane at home and he just fell in the yard and he cut his knee, just right on the cap of his knee. So I had rang my own doctor, went straight down to him, we were seen straight away. So he couldn't do anything because of where the cut was, and it was a deep laceration. So he gave us sent a letter to the casualty since my son Dunnock is straight back. So I came up home, got things ready and went straight back. We landed in the general, I think, it was probably 4:15, 4:30.
In the afternoon?
So we had got in the afternoon, that's okay. Right. And so when we went to the desk, we signed in, and they told us we'd be waiting at least 2 hours to be seen by a nurse.
Right.
And understandable, and I knew they were very busy, it was full, and it was just packed, they were outside the door even waiting. And so we sat down and, you know, we waited, and there were still the 2 hours, 2.5 hours passed, and I had gone up to the desk because my son's knee was bleeding. And I just said, look, would it be another while before we'd be seen by a nurse or a doctor? And they said, yeah, it would be another couple of hours, that they're inundated with people and that they're very busy in the other section. So it was grand. I sat down again and I waited another hour and a half, 2 hours passed. And before I knew it was 10 o'clock at night time. And my son was in severe pain on his knee and kept bleeding. I had to go to the toilet to keep getting tissue, putting it on.
You couldn't even get a bandage for it?
No, there was no bandage. It was only his own doctor here in Talbot that actually bandaged up his knee, but he was still weeping from it.
Yeah, of course.
So I was in and out, getting into the toilet, putting on tissue on it, and trying to make him as comfortable as possible. He was in severe pain.
What age is he, Sandra?
He's only 7.
Only 7?
7.
Okay.
But like that, you know, he was... he was upset. I was upset. I didn't want to know that I was upset and distressed. And I was trying to keep calm as I could. And can you be worried in if it's going to get infected and it's going on so long? And so 10 o'clock came. I had gone back up to the desk again and I said, look, please. I said, my son is only 7. He's an open wound. I'm just wondering, is there anyone that can, come to him? He's in severe pain. Can I get a bit of Nurofen, a bit of Calpol, to help you with his pain? And at that, about 20 minutes later, a nurse had came to us and she called his name. So we went back to the room and she opened the thing and she seen it and she said, look, she said, to be honest, she said, there is no, I'll tell you the truth, she said, there is no doctor available here right now, she said, and you'll be here another 8 hours before your son be seen.
My God. And that was after waiting from 6 hours, as it was, 7 hours maybe.
Yes. I was absolutely, I couldn't believe what she, if they had said it to me, prior to, and if they gave me 20 more, because that's what they're telling you. So we got into our car, we landed home, it was about 11:30, 12:15 before we actually got home. And then to get up again that morning early to come back in, and we were actually in the casualty at 10:15. We were signed in by 10:10 because there was a queue in front of us. And then again, the same endurance that I had to go through again with my son. I mean, it was appalling, to be honest with you.
You had to wait again several hours.
We had to wait again. It was 4 o'clock before Dunica actually got to see a doctor. And
so another 7 hour wait, 6 hour wait.
Yeah, from 10 o'clock, and it was at 4:15 when my son got to see a doctor, and that he was actually taken care of.
Yeah. What did you see around you? the people, in various different states of waiting and various different states of emergency?
I seen elderly people, craters, they were up in the chairs. One woman told me they were there 15 hours. She had a broken ankle. She still had no cast in her leg. There was another woman that was here on holidays. She had some sort of heart problems, and she was still waiting there. She was there 10 hours. It was the amount of stories that I, when you're sitting down listening to people.
You've nothing else to do. Only talk to people and ask them what their ailment is, and you see it all.
Yes, and it's so upsetting, your heart will go out to them, and they were feeling sorry for my son, but there was worse cases back there, beside my son, I seen an elderly man coming in the door, and he was, he fell, and he had a kind of a big open wound to the head, and on his face, and his daughter came running in the door looking for a wheelchair, and she was very distressed, and very distraught, and upset, and crying, and saying, please, is there someone, and a nurse came out to her, and very nice and calm, she said, sorry, there's no wheelchairs available. She said, my father's outside, I need a wheelchair for him. And at that side, there was none available. And she was panicking, looking around, saying, what am I going to do? And I seen that she was distressed, and everyone did. There were some people who couldn't even get off. They were so weak, to help this lady.
Yeah.
And I just went over, and I said, look, my son has a wheelchair here, because he couldn't walk with his knee. And they did give him that wheelchair when he did come in. And I gave the wheelchair to her, and she was ever so grateful. And when I seen her father come in, my God, I couldn't believe it. And they told her to sit down, that he had to wait 2 hours. And she was still panicky, and I said, you need to go to the desk. This is a very urgent case. So if you knock there and explain, because at that situation, you don't know what to do. You're just... When things are unfolding so fast, your mind wouldn't be, focusing right. She was really hysterical, and I'm glad that they were seen straight away, only the fact that she made it to their attention, and she was, the way she was, and of course the way he was, the wound and things that he had.
There's an example, Sandra, of somebody, and fair play to you for giving up the wheelchair and helping her, somebody who needs to be in the emergency department and needs to be seen straight away. Your son needed to be assessed by a doctor because the wound was too deep for a GP to deal with it, and needed obviously to be stitched, which he eventually was, or even the woman you were talking to who had broken her ankle. I mean, those cases, the idea is, and this has been the idea for a while, that those cases should not be going into an emergency department. There should be an injury clinic to deal with broken bones, to deal with stitches, the normal run-of-the-mill, not pleasant, but certainly things that don't require, instant emergency treatment. And if they could be put diverted in there, then you'd be seen in a timely fashion. Some sort of a timely fashion. Well, that's the idea at least, but that's not happening for some reason.
No, it's a mess. It was just bonkers back there. And what you just said there, if they had a system in place. There is no system, from what I have seen in the last 2 days back there. No one seemed to know what they were doing. And I know it's hard. It's a hard job for him, and I understand. And as I said, look, once we did go behind him doors and seen, you're met with beautiful, lovely doctors, very apologetic to us. But it's just when you get there, it's the system.
It's the bottleneck of the whole system that's leaving the staff down, leaving the patients down, ambulances queuing up, not able to be out on the road because they're waiting to offload people, and they're waiting hours to do that, and all of it is up in a heap.
It is. It was absolutely. I've never seen anything actually like it, and I have been in a few times with my sons when they were sick and things. Nothing like what I have seen in them 2 days. It was it was so upsetting, even for my son. He's only 7, and he even said to me, Mom, is he going to be okay? And then he seen another person coming in, and they were sick, and they were getting sick, and said, Mom, are they going to die? It's very hard for a child
to understand, and it's traumatic enough to see that, and to be in that situation, to see people in that state.
Yeah, and they should have a separate, they should think about having a separate area, and I actually thought they did one time.
For kids, pediatrics.
Wouldn't see this, yes.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of traumatic cases going in there, and severe cases, and you don't want your son to be looking on at all this, and he's thinking the worst.
Yeah.
you know, it was an awful ordeal, actually, that we had to go through for the last 2 days. Yeah.
Sandra, is there any solving it, do you think? I mean, you're seeing the way things have gone over the last number of years, the constant stream of stories that we have, like yours, unfortunately, and there doesn't seem to be any getting on top of it and fixing the problems.
I think it's, you know, our health system is letting us down big time. I mean, it's, you know, I know they're blaming COVID and they're blaming this and that. I don't think that has a lot, you know, they can be rerouted. All them things can be dealt with. There's a lot of technology they can do now. But I just think that it's the lack of common sense that is the major one here. There is absolutely no system whatsoever, you know. No one seems to know anything.
I don't know if this is possible. And, you know, in response to the COVID crisis, it was an all-in response. You know, centres were built almost overnight or over a couple of weeks for people to go into and be assessed. And they were planning for the worst-case scenario and they were building on marquees and, you know, temporary structures to house people and so they'd have some little bit of privacy. And that was all done in response to, obviously, an international unprecedented crisis. But our A&Es seem to be in constant crisis. So even that, like build some sort of a temporary structure beside the A&E to put in extra beds so ambulances can leave people off. Technically, patient safety-wise, is that possible? But it's clear something needs to be done on an emergency level.
They need to act. They need to act fast. I mean, they have to, like, sit down and, like, this can't go on. What's going to happen in the winter time when the winter flu comes in? How can people, how can the staff, how can the nurses, how can the doctors, how can the patients, how can people take this over? This is overloaded. This is absolutely, you know, it's just, there's no words to describe it. And I mean, someone has to, you know, take action and sit down and say, where are we going wrong here? I mean, they can put up hospitals and things like the time of the COVID overnight. They have the beds, they can do this. You know, I'm sure there's plenty of money in the health section that they can actually do all this. You know, they can do it overnight if they want to, and they get the proper people, management behind us, have their protocols and move forward for everyone.
Okay, well, Sandra, look, thanks for telling us your story, and hopefully Dunica's doing well now after it all.
He's
but thanks good, for telling
good.
Us your
he's
story.
He's smiling his face again, thank God.
That's good. That's great.
Yeah, no problem, Terry.
That's Sandra's story there, talking about the experience of it. 7 hours, 8 hours, 6 to 7 hours one day, coming back for the same again the next day, and then seeing all that drama, those people coming in, you know, at the same time in the mix with our 7-year-old child and a call from maybe a separate area. Now, it's intensely difficult, as we've been hearing from many of you who've contacted us in large numbers over the last week or so about the particular problems at the moment in University Hospital Kerry. Some of it's down to the summertime, tourists, extra people in the county, increase in population definitely is a problem, but the issue of the management of our systems and the problems elsewhere in blood laboratories, in x-rays, in the ambulance service, in the shortage of staff being the major, major one that seems to affect absolutely everything. We had the story last week from Breda Joy, who was telling us about the nurse coming out, senior nurse coming out and telling people, look, there's 80 people here. I have 2 trolley spaces left and I have only 2 doctors for the remainder of the night.